please help me go ahead and cue our video for our first closing keynote speaker, Aaron Mankin.
Aaron Mankin is the creator of the hit podcast Lore, where he explores the darker side of history, as well as supernatural thrillers. Lore was voted one of iTunes' best podcasts and has been included on must-listen lists from USA Today, Entertainment Weekly, The Guardian, and The Huffington Post. In April of 2016, it was announced that the producers of television hit The Walking Dead would be adapting Lore to the small screen, and it will be debuting very soon. Born and raised in Illinois, Aaron now lives with his wife and children on the historic North Shore of Boston, right in the heart of the Salem Witch Trials territory. But today, he's right here at Podcast Movement. Please welcome Aaron Mankin.
Good morning. Good morning. Story is what I do. I'm a storyteller. I've always been a storyteller. I can trace the roots of that passion back to fifth grade. Very specific time, I know, but fifth grade. Fifth grade was the year that three very significant things happened to me. The first was my teacher sent me home with a copy of the Scholastic Readers Club catalog. Do we have fans of that in this room? Every Star Wars, Knight Rider, E.T. book that I own from the 80s came from the Scholastic Readers Club catalog. My kids bring them home now, and I want to buy everything inside of them. I've decided that it's in the ink. I think it's a delivery device for some sort of psychotropic drug, and you just buy books. Anyway, it was in the pages of one of those catalogs that I found a book of strange and unusual tales. My parents were dirt poor, but I somehow convinced them to buy it for me. They did, and I fell in love. Later that year, it was the beginning of October, my reading teacher wanted us to work on our handwriting. She always used the term chicken scratch. I think teachers are taught that in school to use that to humiliate students. And she wanted us to work on just getting that cursive down. And so she assigned us a short story that we had to write for the Halloween season. And I wrote a story and loved every minute of it. I wrote a story, if you want to know, about a family that brings home a pumpkin from the pumpkin patch. And they get the knives out and, you know, they cut the top and they carve it and they find human bones inside. And it turns out that the cemetery that used to be under the pumpkin patch was like pushing bones up into the pumpkins, and that was the story that a fifth grade mind could come up with. So, memory number two. Memory number three was me in the back of my mom and dad's conversion van. Those big ones with the mini blinds, you remember those? They had like a poker table in the back with cup holders. And my mom and a friend of hers who had a daughter my age in my class, we were going to the mall, which was an hour away. And I remember sitting on the back seat next to Cindy Riblett, who I kindergarten all the way up through high school. I had a notebook and a pencil in my hand, and I turned to her and I said, I'm going to be a writer when I grow up. I'll never forget it. And I've told story ever since that moment. All through my childhood, my adolescence, out of college, I've experimented with really bad poetry. essays, short stories, and even into the world of novels. I've always been a writer, but I've never done it for a living. In 2007, my wife and I discovered that we were pregnant with our first child, and we both worked, and she had this desire to be a stay-at-home mom. She wanted to be home 24/7, and I wanted to support that. So I left my job at the front desk of a medical office and took this little side business I had, which was doing some graphic design projects for people, and I turned it into a full-time job. And it was actually really amazing. I designed branding and marketing materials for companies all over the world. I worked for myself, got to drink coffee and listen to music while I worked in my own home. It was great. I did lunch with my family every day. I got to watch the kids grow up around me. You can't really argue with some of the aspects of freelance life, right? So it was amazing while it lasted. 7 years in the fall of 2014, something changed. And I don't exactly know what it was. To this day, I look back and I still try to figure out, like, why did the business start to tank? My only theory is that I had exhausted all of those personal recommendations, you know, the referrals that clients give to other clients. Eventually, that just runs out, and I think I'd run my course. So I remember in October of 2014, looking at my bank account, and I didn't have enough money to pay the bills. You know, and November 1st was coming around. But freelance is feast and famine. Some months you make more than you need, some months you make less. You prepare for that. I thought, maybe it's going to get better. I took on a little bit of debt, and I went into November, and it was worse. And I realized at that point, I'm going to have to get a job, like a real job with a dependable paycheck, right? So I started looking. And it's not an easy process, especially when you're a designer who doesn't know how to do web development, you know, little handicaps like that along the way. And I looked all through November, I looked all through December, and finally in January of 15, I got a job. I got hired by a web development company, which sounds awesome, except they wanted me to write, not design. Writing sounds awesome too, but they wanted me to write about web development. So I was writing articles about agile method versus standard method of web development, and I could feel my soul shriveling up inside my chest. But this new job came with some problems. It paid me 2/3 of what I needed to pay all my bills for the month, and it required 40 hours of my time each week. So what I was left with was the evenings that I had always devoted to writing fiction, writing about business, all those things. Those evenings had to go away and become the place where what little design work I still had left would go. So I gave it up. I walked away from Story. And it's depressing. To do this thing at that time was almost 30 years that I'd been writing. To do that and to walk away, it felt like I had failed. I had a dream, and I gave up on it. Now, I had recently, to that point in January, just finished one more novel. Fully admitting, I self-published these things, right? So you write them. Being a designer allowed me to have the skills to do covers and interior layout. I didn't have to spend a lot of money on it, but I was making maybe $200 lifetime on a book. So it wasn't, like you talk about hobbies that pay for themselves, writing was not a hobby that paid for itself. So think about all those movies where the plane is going down and you need to lighten the load so the plane will stay at high altitude, and so they throw the cargo out, and then maybe they unbuckle the seats and throw them out, and sometimes they stick parachutes in people's hands and push them out the door too. Like, that's what I was doing with my hobbies, because I needed all my time to do this day job that didn't pay enough and then wrap it up with design work in the evening. But still, I'd finished the book. I mean, I had to put it out, right? I had to get it out there and at least be done with it. So I started thinking about how I could maybe sell more than, 100 copies of the book. And what people do nowadays, you've seen this a lot on the internet, if you're selling a product or a service, they'll ask you to sign up for their email newsletter, and they'll give you something in return, right? So if you sign up for this business coach, he's going to give you a white paper that has his 5 top tips on how to revolutionize your tax status or something like that. And if it's valuable enough, people will download the reward in exchange for giving over their email address. And I thought, I do have a fiction email list. Maybe I could get enough people on there that when I do publish this book, I'll make $300 instead of $200. It's not going to pay for the hobby, but maybe I can sell more books and build more readers and back catalog and all that kind of thing. So I thought, well, what's valuable about what I do? I write supernatural thrillers was the type of novel. I think Stephen King, right? So real world people, unusual circumstances. And my favorite thing to do is to find real folklore and weird twisted history and elements that just make you scratch your head and work them into the novels. What would happen is I would research and find 10 or 20 per novel, and I'd use 2 or 3. So I had this backlog of really weird stories that I wanted to share with people. So I decided I would create this document that I called my 5 favorite New England myths. It was going to be me writing in a nonfiction voice about my 5 favorite stories or historical tales from New England, which is where I live. And I started writing it in my spare time, by the way. I wrote 4 of the 5, and I looked at the word count, and it was around 10,000 words, and I'm formatting this at 8.5 by 11, so letter-sized, and I realized I'm going to ask people to download this and read it on their phone. Have you ever read a PDF on your phone? You want to rip your eyes out, right? Because you're double-tapping paragraphs, and you're pinching and zooming, and maybe if I turn it this way, it'll work. I had created something that was going to be worthless to people because of the frustrating experience. And so in early March of 2015, I clicked on that icon for that Pages file, and I dragged it to the trash can. I just paused there for a second because I didn't have a lot of time to spare, and I'd put a lot of time into this, and I didn't want to make a rash decision. But I just couldn't think of another opportunity here. What other option did I have? But then it occurred to me, as I'm still hovering over that trash can, I don't read Pages. I read through audio. It's a busy life, right? Road trips, going out for runs, working in the office while I'm doing big layout projects or whatever. I've always got a book in my head. What if I recorded these essays? I've got a microphone. I had a Yeti. A GarageBand on my computer, right? Like everybody else who has a Mac. Like, why not? Low barrier to entry. I'll do an audiobook version of these things. And then what I'll do is I'll take the 5 MP3 files and I'll put them in a zip folder and I'll let people download that if they give me their email address. That was my plan. To let them download files that they would listen to however they could figure that out. So I did it. I took the first story in the pack. It was one of my favorites. And I recorded it. Horrible, horrible. My office was in the third floor of our house, hardwood floors, horsehair plaster walls that were all angular because it was in the eaves. It was an acoustic nightmare. Horrible, horrible. So I put some music underneath it, like an Instagram filter to hide all the echoes. And come on, that's why people use music, right? It's not about mood. It's about hiding the flaws. And I exported the MP3, and I created a link for it, and I sent it to my buddy, Seth. We've got a lot of things in common. He's the same age as me. He likes the same music, likes to read the same things. And I said, Seth, here's my plan. Here's the link to the file. Go listen to it and tell me if you think I should do this. And about 20 minutes later, he came back to me and he said, don't do it. It's like, oh! All right, well, there's that. My Hail Mary has missed the receiver and I'm done. He said, no, this is a podcast. And I said, no, it's not. A podcast is three white guys talking about iPhone updates. I mean, come on. Now, before I offend anybody, this was March of 2015. Serial was new, it was climbing, but I wasn't listening to podcasts, I was listening to audiobooks. And for a very long time, podcasting was a highly technical field, and most of the people who did it loved technology, and there were a lot of tech shows out there, right? So, I'm not completely off. So I said, no, this is not a podcast. It's just an audiobook. And he said, no, storytelling can be in a podcast. You should make more of these and release them. So here is one last chance to throw the ball, right? It's like one of those football games where you think he's had his last chance, but they find like 1 second somewhere in the rule book that they can make one more pass. And I thought, all right, well, why not? So in 48 hours, I want you to understand how quickly I did this. I didn't think, okay? I'm a designer, so a lot of these things are instinctual. I branded the podcast. I built a website, bought the domain name, all that stuff. I found podcast hosting. I figured out how to get all of those elements into this thing called iTunes and Google Play in 48 hours. And on March 18th of 2015, I clicked the button. Can I get my slides to come up, please? There's a story. 9 downloads. Just soak that in. That's a 9. That's a single digit, right? 9 downloads on March 15th, or March 18th. That was 2.5 years ago. And a lot has happened in those 2.5 years. Just the other day, I crossed the 83 million download mark. So, thank you. And I get it, that pales in comparison to some of these shows. The How Stuff Works Network hitting 1 billion. It's like, really? But 2.5 years, a lot can happen. Really quickly, the story of what happened after I clicked publish. Let me pause there for a second. You've done that, right? Like you've stood on the edge with your mouse hovering over publish on your project. Or maybe you're about to do it. And it's a really scary place to be. I mean, To click publish for the first time is this moment of like risk, and it's the unknown. And yet we still do it, don't we? Because we're creators. It's just, it's what we do. We make things. We work and we dream and we walk toward our goals and we get to the publish button and eventually we just have to click the button. So set your expectations low. 9 downloads, right? It can get better. So over the last 2.5 years, some things happened. I launched in March of 2015. The show grew to a size that allowed me to sell sponsorships by June. So in June, I was running ads. 3 months, right? By July, the income received from those ads covered my bills. I was free. I quit the jobs, plural. And I was a full-time podcaster by July of 15. And then some really amazing things started to happen. I started to get emails, right? First it's fans, people who like the show. Then I started to get emails from television production companies. Dozens of them. That was in August. September, I started getting emails from literary agents. You know, the people who no author can ever find and get in touch with were emailing me. October, it was publishers. All because I stopped myself from deleting a file, right? I know there's a lot of speeches about don't give up, it's eventually gonna work out, and it's not always true. But I can't help but look back at what has happened and look at that moment where I'm hovering my mouse over the trash can. And you have to wonder, what if, right? What if I just deleted it? So 2.5 years, a lot can happen. But I want to pause with that for a second and give you a mental image. Everybody here has flown a kite, right? Let's see. You've done this, right? Or at the very least, you've seen it on TV. How most of us experience our lives, right? On TV. Worst case, you're seeing it for the first time on a screen. A kite is a really simple device, isn't it? It is a piece of super light plastic or fabric that's stretched over a frame. And there's a piece of string attached to it, and in that kid's hand is a spool of that string. And the basic premise is simple. Using the wind and running, you get your kite up into the air. It's a magical thing, because there's something powerful about making things fly. But it's also not very magical. It's super controllable. There are things that you can do, like playing guitar or riding a bike or learning to design. You can learn to get better at flying a kite. You can control aspects of it. You can run faster, right? You can learn how to flick your wrist and pull when the wind is pulling in a certain direction. You learn when to let out the string and maybe when to pull back a little bit. You can get better at flying a kite, like a lot of things in life. Of course, the kite is a metaphor. That's why I'm talking about it. It's a metaphor for podcasting. Because all of us have this thing that has elements that we can control. And if we master them, we can get our kite to go up. The higher it goes, the more we succeed. So, like I said, I've done this for 2.5 years. And I say this often in conversations. You're going to have to bear with me if you've heard me say this before. I kind of fell into this, all right? I almost deleted the file. I had no vision for a podcast. I'm the guy that like walks into the door frame a couple of times before he walks through the door. I fell into this, and I am making it up as I go along. I do my best. As a designer, one of the things that I would do is get done with a really rough project where maybe I didn't mesh well with the client, or it took twice as long for the project to get done as possible. Logos are hard to design. They should always be hard because you're trying to pack a lot of communication in one place. Sometimes it would fail. These projects would fail. And I would always do autopsies on my projects. I would sit back and I'd say, why did that fail? What went wrong? What can I fix for the future? And that instinct is still in me with podcasting. I have a lot less failures, thankfully, these days. But I still sit back and I say, why is this working? Or why did that thing that I just did not work? What can I tweak? What knobs can I turn to make this better? So over the years, I've assembled some core principles that I hold to and I want to share them with you today. Now, they're my personal opinions, and you might not like them. You might disagree with parts of them. But just remember, they work for me, okay? And if that's worth anything to you, take it for what it is. But these are the things that I hold to when I podcast. So number one, be consistent. Be consistent. Now this covers a whole range of topics, but I'm gonna hit a couple of them. Pick a release schedule and stick to it. If your show is weekly, release it weekly. If it's bi-weekly, release it bi-weekly. I have seen so many shows come out the gate and say that we're a weekly show, and they release an episode, and then 7 days later, they release an episode. And then 3 days later, there's a new one, and then 11 days later, there's a new one. Sometimes 3 weeks after that, there's one. I thought you were a weekly show. If you have a schedule, stick to it. I said this last year, but if you want to make podcasting your full-time job, treat it like one. Put on your big boy pants. Be an adult. Stick to your schedule. And that's my dad voice right there, okay? Seriously, if you think your schedule is loosey-goosey, grow up and fix that. And that's not a popular thing to say. Here's why. I'm gonna validate this. Listener expectations are your key to success, okay? You have to manage their expectations. So if you come out the gate and you say, my show is bi-weekly, every other week you're gonna get a new episode, and you don't deliver on that, you disappoint listeners. And some disappointed listeners unsubscribe. And if the goal is to get the kite higher, unsubscribing is not the thing that you need, right? Not people say, well, Aaron, my life's complicated, right? I'm working two jobs. I have like 3 hours in the weekend to do this, and sometimes things come up. My kid's birthday, I have a dentist appointment. Like, I just can't do it all the time. I don't care. I don't care. Maybe then the model for you isn't just an ongoing release cycle like what I use, with no breaks, ever. Maybe what you need to do is write, record, and produce an entire season of a dozen episodes, and hold on to them until you're done, and then release them on a regular schedule. I have the benefit of a few fans out there, and they give me feedback on how they listen to my show. There are people that schedule date nights around my show. It's a storytelling, right? So we're talking like 1920s, radio hour, where the whole family gathers around. There are people that light a fire in their fire pit out back every other Monday night, press play on the new episode, and as a group of four or five friends, enjoy my stories. What if I was late? What if they sat down and went to iTunes or whatever, and they where is it? That's the one from last time. How disappointed would they be? You can't disappoint your listeners. Set expectations and keep them. That's how you gain subscribers. You lose them by ticking them off. Consistency also comes into play with quality, too. I'm all for getting better, but you at least have to stay the same. If you think, oh man, I'm having trouble with this, and all I can do is record into my crappy iPhone microphone this week and put it out, your quality goes down and you're gonna disappoint some listeners. I realize that sometimes tech gets in the way, it's complicated. Try as best as you can to be consistent with your quality. And format too, your format and your topic. If they come to your show to learn about audiophile level turntables, don't talk about beer, right? It's just not, that's not why they're there. Get to it. Get to it. So, rule number one is to be consistent. And rule number two is to be prepared. I have papers everywhere, guys. This is amazing. All right. Be prepared. Again, I'm a storyteller, right? This is what I do for a living. I tell story and story. They always talk about writers falling into two camps. There are pantsers and planners. Pantsers are the people who just sit down and write. Believe it or not, J.R.R. Tolkien pantsed The Lord of the Rings. I can't get my head around that. He just sat up and kept writing. But he prepared his entire life, right? Learning about cultures and mythology and folklore, and he understood it. So he gets a hall pass on that. I'm an outliner and a planner. And when it comes to storytelling, I feel like that's where it's at. You're taking people on a journey from point A to point B, and you have to have a plan to do it. Now, obviously, lore is just straight up storytelling, right? You can tell the moment you get into it. There's nothing else but story. And you might think, well, I've got a discussion panel, or I interview people. I don't tell story. Yeah, you do. Every one of you. I don't know your podcasts. Every one of you tells a story. When Marc Maron sits down with a guest, he is walking his listeners through an experience of getting to know a celebrity, somebody that they might not have heard of or they might not know some details of. And if you do it right, you're learning about them in pieces, doled out, leading you from point A to point B. It's all story, every bit of it. And that means you have to plan and prepare. Don't wing it. Don't show up on Skype with your buddy 5 minutes before and say, what are we talking about? You can't do that, okay? And I'll tell you why in a moment with rule number three, but you've got to be prepared. Plan out what you want to say if you're telling a story. Plan out the questions that you want to ask your guest. Plan out the discussion panel topics and tell the panel, here's our goal for the entire conversation. We're going to go from question one to question two, but the goal is to move people toward this conclusion. Plan the journey. Otherwise, your listeners won't make the journey with you. They get disappointed and they unsubscribe, right? Next, be respectful. Every time somebody puts in their earbuds and they tap play on their phone, they are paying for your show with their limited time and attention. They only have so much. Time, money, and attention are our limited resources. And podcasts are usually free. People are paying for your show with their time. Be respectful of that time. I'm going to have a heart attack the next time I hear a podcast that starts off with 10 minutes of inside jokes, off-topic banter between the hosts before they get to the topic. Seriously. Like, I get it. You're buddies, right? You like Magic the Gathering. But I came to the show to hear about business advice. So get to it, right? And if you think I'm picking on you, I'm not. I'm actually picking on a former show of mine from years ago called Homework, where we talked about working from home. But more and more, we got off track. I was a bad podcaster, and I talked a lot about other things. So when somebody clicks play, they've come for a reason, right? The format of your show, the genre, the topic, the content that they get from it. Don't disappoint them, and don't disrespect them. They're there with their valuable time. Give them what they came for, okay? Respect your listeners. Respect them with high-quality content. Respect them with a consistent schedule, right? Respect them by being prepared. Again, if you treat it like a full-time job, you're a lot more likely to make it a full-time job. And people can feel that through the MP3 file in your ears. They can feel that you are serious about this, and it helps. If you have the benefit of having sponsors on your show, be respectful of your sponsors, okay? I talked to a lot of ad companies today, or yesterday. One of the things that I've heard is a lot of people just get the copy from the ad agency and they read it. What are you doing? Be respectful. You're building a relationship between your sponsor and your listener. Find a good match in the companies that matter and that your listeners will like. That's respect. And then write something unique for your audience about that sponsor and marry it up. That's respecting your listeners. Don't wing it. Don't half-ass it. I'm serious. What's happening is sponsors will just walk away. Well, you're just reading the same thing that they heard three other places, so they're not hearing it anymore. So craft it custom. Respect your advertisers. And then last thing here. Actually, it's not last thing. I added one a little bit ago. Be original, okay? Please do not be a copycat. And I don't say that out of some sense of competition or jealousy. I say it out of creativity, okay? Think about somebody who crafts a podcast for the first time in a bubble. I had never heard of a storytelling podcast, so I didn't know what I was making. But what I had was a unique challenge. I had a format that I envisioned. I have my own personal styles and my own skill level. What Lore became is a product of my tools and my problems. There's a thumbprint on that that's unique. When you copy someone who makes their own show and say, I can do that. Me talking over a music bed? I can do that. You're not making a show. You're copying someone else's solution and just pasting it onto your own lifestyle. You paint yourself into their corner. You solve their problems. You stick to their format and their passions, you become less than unique. Don't copy. Be original. Look at what you have going on, your tools, your skills, your passions, and craft it unique for yourself. I think we can all agree that the podcasting industry is growing tremendously, isn't it? I mean, just seeing the difference between this conference and last year, it's insane, and I'm so proud of it. But when new listeners come in, as they are all the time, what they don't need to do is bump into 24 copycats of the show that brought them in. And they get disappointed in the level of quality, the lack of focus, and they walk away from podcasting because they think most of it's junk. If we come up with our best game and we bring our best stuff to the table, we will lock in those new listeners and they'll stay, and then they'll try everybody else's shows, right? Being original is good for the industry. We need more diverse voices. We need fresh approaches. We need people who bring their own style to audio production. Go ahead, listen to other people. Listen to how Roman Mars handles the transitions between guests and found footage and music. Like, do it, listen, pay attention. Don't copy. Learn techniques and go find your way to use them on your show. Be original. Don't take the mold and make a cheap plastic knockoff. Break the mold. Be original. And last, be focused. If you're launching a show or your show just launched, your job is to make a damn good show. If your show's less than 6 months old, you shouldn't have a Patreon account. I'm sorry. You shouldn't be looking for sponsors. You shouldn't be asking your listeners for money. Focus on making a show. Pour every ounce of your energy and attention and resources into building the best show you possibly can. Because if you build a crappy kite, it won't fly anywhere. Make the best thing you can make before you go and get distracted by raising money and all those other pieces. Stay focused. If the show grows, all of those things are going to be a lot easier to take care of. And they'll be a lot more satisfying too. So stay focused. So I guess the question I want to leave you guys with today is, how high can you fly, right? Your podcast, as I said before, is a kite. How high can you fly? Whoop, go back. I thought I had a picture of a kite in there. I'm wrong. That wasn't a kite. Podcasting is like flying the kite, right? And the higher you can get yours to go, the more successful you are. And I want to tell you, your kite can soar. Literally, the sky is the limit. Don't think, man, I'm going to get to sponsorships, and that's the end goal, because it gets so much better than that. I've had the joy of flying pretty high over the last couple of years, and I'm so thankful for it. Again, I fell into this accidentally. I'm just taking it all as like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And I'm so thankful for it. I've had some unusual things happen as well. You probably saw this in your gift bag when you showed up. It's beautiful art, isn't it? It's gorgeous. I had the opportunity to sign a book deal with Penguin Random House back in February. A 3-book deal taking old and rare lore stories and collating them into 3 volumes. They're illustrated by the same artist who did the cover, hardcover, gift editions. They're just beautiful, beautiful books. I'm so excited about it. The first book comes out on October 10th. The series is called The World of Lore, and it's Monstrous Creatures is the first one to come out. Think about that 5th grader inside of me. Looking at Cindy Riblett on the couch of the van on the way to the mall, I'm going to be a writer someday. And I didn't get there like I thought I would. This is not the path that I picked, but I did it. And you can too. It's happening more and more as we go. For the more visually inclined, those TV production deals turned into something else. I got dozens of them. Some of them were from small companies, some of them were from bigger companies. I signed up with a company called Propagate. They make a show called The Planet of the Apps on Apple. They also partnered up with another company called Valhalla. They make The Walking Dead. They know how to make good TV. And we worked with Amazon to create a 6-episode, 1-hour anthology series that's gonna launch in October as well. Guys, I've seen it. It is amazing. And it talks to you about the power of story, right? Like you can take something that's designed for audio and you can move it over to the visual format or to print. I don't have footage to show you because they're still like putting color layers on it and tweaking sound and stuff, which I let the pros do. But I do have a teaser video that no one has seen. You want to see it?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Throughout history, fear was best kept buried. Sealed. Closed. But folklore has a way of keeping the door open wide, allowing stories to live and breathe, to creep inside and haunt us. I'm Aaron Mankey. This is Lore.
It's gorgeous. I watch it a couple times a day and just like pinch myself. Absolutely amazing. You'll hear more about it really, really soon. But both the book and the TV show come out in October. I'm gonna be a little busy. But it's fun. It's so fun. Look, I'm not putting these things in front of you to brag. Okay? Well, maybe a tiny bit. I want you to have hope. You make this thing that you're passionate about. You have dreams for, right? And this thing, this book, this TV thing, it's happening more and more. There are other podcasters here at this conference who are going through the same journey. And by the time we get back here next year, it will be dozens more. Because Hollywood has taken notice, right? Television and film, they've caught on. We are unique creators, and they want what we're making. So hold on. Have hope. Work hard. This is what you were made for. And you have tools now. Right? There are controllables in flying that kite. There we go. Well, whatever. There's a picture of a kite. Imagine it. I'm going to put that there. Just remember that there are controllables in what you do, okay? You can control the quality of your show. You can control, just like a kite, the flick of the wrist and how hard you work. You can go out every day to the park and run around. You can get better at flying the kite. You can buy better string. You can buy a better kite. Like you can tweak what you do. It's controllable. I call them the controllables. Just stick with them. And I think I've given you the tools, hopefully, if you like them. Be consistent. Be respectful. Be prepared. Be original. Be focused. These are the things that you need to do, the tools. These are the knobs you can tweak. I'm going to fully admit, there are things you can't control. There are uncontrollables. You can't control the wind, right? You can show up at the park every day, and if there's no wind, nothing is going to happen. And the wind is luck. You can't control that. I can't control that people emailed me and set some of these things in motions. But if you're not out in the park running around, it doesn't matter whether the wind blows or not, does it? You have to get out there and run your ass off. So, let's do that. I mean, I believe in you. So let's work our asses off. Let's get out there and work hard every single day doing this thing that we do. Let's try and fail and get back up and try again and keep moving because that's what we do. The park is wide open, guys. There are miles of grass to run on. Let's go fly a kite.